we have a great number of young people in court today who apparently are accompanying their parents to work today and observing the court, and the court would like to give a warm welcome to all the youngsters, and we look forward to the day when you'll stand at this podium and help us decide these cases, too. The next case of the morning is number 013474, Gloria Bailey against Joanne Barnhart. Mr. Schultz.
May it please the court, your honors, my name is Barry Schultz, and I represent the plaintiff Gloria Bailey here this morning. The administrative law judge in this case erred by ignoring the evidence that Ms. Bailey suffers from depression, by mentioning only evidence which supported her decision and not discussing the volume of evidence which favors Ms. Bailey's claim. She also violated provisions of the Social Security regulations and rulings by not giving any reasons for rejecting the opinion of a treating orthopedic doctor that the plaintiff's pain was disabling. She violated the regulations and Lauer versus Apfel case of this court in not discussing and considering the opinion of a treating chiropractor that the plaintiff could only work, only had a 2 to 3 hour work tolerance. And also she failed to follow the regulatory requirements of analyzing the opinion of the treating physician, Dr. Lee Sigler, that the plaintiff had a requirement that she be allowed to lie down for 30 to 60 minutes.
Having read the brief, sir, and heard your encapsulation right now of all the things you think were wrong, the thing that came to my mind as I read your submission was, what's the worst thing that happened here is from your point of view? What is the essence of your problem with the Social Security Administration's resolution of this? What's the most fundamental problem?
That the ALJ ignored the volume of evidence that favored Ms. Bailey's claim. She only mentions 6 treatment notes where Ms. Bailey said she was feeling better or that treatment was helping out of some 150 days when Ms. Bailey either went to physical therapy or saw her doctors. And the majority of those times she complained of increasing pain or worse pain, and the doctors made many findings of markedly reduced range of motion in the hip and positive straight leg raising and radiculitis, which is a disease of the spinal nerve roots, on an EMG report. And the ALJ did not discuss any of that evidence. She did not weigh that evidence against the evidence that she did mention in reaching her conclusion.
Mr. Schultz, Ms. Siegel might be the right person to ask this of, but when Ms. Freeman, the occupational therapist, noted or reported that Ms. Bailey tested positive for symptom magnification, what exactly did she mean?
Well, we don't know. We don't know exactly what she meant. She doesn't explain that any further. However, in the treating psychologist or the examining psychologist report, he administered a test, the MMPI, which he found showed symptom, which he called intensification and exacerbation, and he stated that that was because of the stress level that Ms. Bailey was under due to her chronic pain. There's no further evidence of that. If the administrative law judge questioned what that meant, if he thought that if she thought that it possibly meant the claimant was exaggerating her symptoms, then the ALJ was required by regulation and to recontact the doctor, or in that case the occupational therapist, to find out what she meant. A plaintiff who is experiencing symptom magnification or intensification may well be experiencing greater pain than would otherwise be expected just from the physical impairment, but since there is a psychological impairment here, that might actually support Ms. Bailey's claim as opposed to undermining her credibility.
She didn't really claim to have a psychological impairment, though, did she? Ms. Bailey, she kind of minimized that aspect of her.
Well, she minimized it, but it was diagnosed, and it really isn't for a person themselves necessarily to know if they're suffering from a psychological impairment. When the judge asked her if she had a mental limitation or saw a psychologist or a psychiatrist, Ms. Bailey stated, no, but they're giving me antidepressant medications because they say I'm depressed from my pain and I'm always short-tempered and irritable. She also denied feeling depressed when she saw Dr. Rouhani, but then she said that she had feelings of fatigue and low energy and insomnia, and Dr. Rouhani actually found that she demonstrated signs and symptoms of depression. So whether or not Ms. Bailey knew she was suffering from depression, it had been diagnosed, and this court, in the cases of Thompson versus Sullivan and Stambaugh versus Sullivan, has held that any time there's evidence of a psychological impairment, it has to be at least considered and discussed by the administrative law judge.
Many people try to deny any kind of mental problem impairment because they feel it's such a bad mark on or don't they? I mean, that's not unusual for someone to deny.
No, I don't think it is. And so especially someone who believes that they are disabled based on a physical impairment, sometimes people cling to that, not wanting to acknowledge that there's something else possibly going on. In addition, in this case, there's an opinion by the treating orthopedic doctor that the plaintiff's pain was disabling. And although that is an opinion that's ultimately reserved to the commissioner herself in Social Security ruling 96-2P and 96-5P states that administrative law judges must always discuss the weight that they're giving to every opinion by a treating physician, even if it's on a question that's reserved to the commissioner. They may never ignore such an opinion, and they must always give reasons in the decision for the weight given to the opinion. In this case, the ALJ completely ignored Dr. Niemeyer's opinion, doesn't mention it at all.
Now, with respect to Dr. Lee Sigler, the ALJ said that the opinion rendered was sympathetic, I believe is the word that was used, discounted it because on that basis. Isn't that enough for the ALJ to simply say that from the tone of this, it seems to me the doctor's feeling sorry for the patient more than giving us a straight from the shoulder scientific analysis?
Well, actually, if you review Dr. Lee Sigler's treatment notes, she made many objective findings of markedly restricted range of motion. As I mentioned, the EMG showed radiculitis, which the ALJ doesn't mention. So the ALJ, at a minimum, has to explain how this objective evidence, which does support Dr. Lee Sigler's opinion, somehow it still leads to a conclusion that it was sympathetic as opposed to objective. I think the majority of the evidence in this case shows that there is objective evidence in supporting the doctor's opinion, but again, at a minimum, needed to be discussed. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the ALJ didn't discuss Dr. Niemeyer's opinion, but she did cite to Dr. Niemeyer's diagnosis of
fibromyalgia.
Thank you.
Yes.
And she also described the treatment by that doctor. So she did pay some attention to Dr. Niemeyer.
She did, but if you look at the opinion, the only time she mentions Dr. Niemeyer's opinion is actually to try to undermine Ms. Bailey's credibility. She never acknowledges that Dr. Niemeyer made specific findings that were favorable for the plaintiff, and again, didn't acknowledge his opinion. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Schultz. We'll hear now from the Siegel.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Catherine Siegel. I represent the Commissioner of Social Security in this case. I'm going to go right into the evidence. I gather that you understand that this is a credibility case, that the main issue here is whether the claimant's neck and back pain are disabling, and the ALJ looked at the record in a way to describe why she found that the pain complaints were not of a disabling intensity and duration and impact. The The issue is not here is not whether she had any pain at all. Clearly, the ALJ acknowledged that she had a certain degree of pain, and this is particularly true because of the residual functional capacity finding that the ALJ finally decided. She limited very extensively to light and sedentary work with a sit-stand option and with several different postural limitations against climbing and that sort of thing.
The real problem seems to be that one of her physicians said she needed to be able to lie down once.
And the ALJ directly addressed that.
I know, but if that were true, she'd probably be found disabled, wouldn't she?
That's right, because the vocational expert said that to lie down during the day you would not be able to.
And that's where Dr. Lee Siegler's testimony is really so important to the claimant's case and really so important to yours, in that if her testimony were accepted.
And we have some very compelling evidence from Dr. Lee Siegler. In May of 1998, Dr. Lee Siegler did a very extensive report, and the findings that are in that report, the claimant's attorney is now talking about is very significant findings. Now, if you read Dr. Lee Siegler's evaluation of those findings, it may lead you to a different conclusion. Dr. Lee Siegler acknowledges in the May 1998 report, which is at 347 of the transcript, that there's an EMG that's consistent with radiculitis in the lumbar spine, that there's an MRI that has a herniated disc, an MRI that shows a herniated disc at the thoracic lumbar disc space, but that herniation didn't impinge on the spinal cord. And she also notes some hip motion limitations and some nearly normal muscle strength. And then she also talks about an MRI finding in the lower lumbar spine, which is normal, and nerve conduction studies in the legs, which are normal. And based on all of this evidence, she gives an opinion that the claimant is limited to sedentary work with a sit-stand option of every 20 to 30 minutes. Now, those limitations correspond with the ALJ's conclusion. And so we can see that the ALJ did indeed consider these findings in the context of Dr. Lee Siegler's report and her conclusion. She makes the conclusion about what those significant findings, how they limit the claimant. The ALJ, it's not her job to decide the objective findings.
Spring, but then she rendered the subsequent opinion in the fall. But why does the first opinion contradict the second? I'm not sure
if you look at the findings in the October opinion, they're very similar to the May opinion. The October opinion also shows a normal bone scan. It shows right hip x-rays with minimal abnormalities, and also lower lumbar spine is unremarkable, and normal strength and normal range of the neck motion, and really the only positive finding she has is a decreased sensation in the right thumb. And before she renders the opinion about the lying down and the increase in the sitting and standing limitation, she says that she's unable to explain why her symptoms are so bad, why she's complaining of a disabling degree of pain, because really all these findings don't support that. And Dr. Lee Siegler, she said that at 342, that she says, "I'm unable, however, to explain the fact that her symptoms are only on the right side of her body, and I'm at this point unable to explain her right and neck upper limb symptoms." She was initially thinking that because there was a lack of objective findings, there might be a fibromyalgia diagnosis. But given the right-sided weakness that doesn't correspond with the diagnosis of fibromyalgia, fibromyalgia is diffuse findings, where she's got right-sided findings, which would be more in line with a herniation or a nerve root impingement, but the record doesn't show that. So she's saying that she's at a loss.
What was her specialty, Dr. Lee Siegel?
She is an occupational rehabilitation specialist, so that's really a very significant specialty. It's more important than the treaters like Niemeyer, who actually acknowledged that he has no specialty in doing disability evaluation.
Dr. Niemeyer was the what?
Dr. Niemeyer was her regular general practitioner.
I see.
And at 205 of the transcript, he says that I don't do disability.
The rheumatologist in this group? Who was the rheumatologist?
I'm not sure who the rheumatologist was. I know she had a neurologist, Dr. Aronson, I think.
Reading the
but there are a number of different specialties that I have
reading the ALJ's opinion, my concern was that although she indicated that fibromyalgia could be the basis of a disability and one could have pain from it,
mm-hmm.
I'm not so sure she understood the disease and the nonspecific nature of the disease and the fact that you cannot usually clinically document pain from that disease the way you can clinically document pain from a, for instance, nerve impingement or trauma or something of that nature.
Well, no, on the contrary, I think she did understand the nature of fibromyalgia because she talks about how the unique nature of this case is that the treating or examining healthcare professionals typically do not base their findings on objective abnormalities. So that's why she's looking at other things like what the response to treatment was, and what her activities were, what she told her doctor she was able to do. And so in addition to the objective abnormalities, which the physicians are citing to those
symptom
things.
Symptom magnification, for instance, is a pretty common effect of fibromyalgia. And it's you're going to see it because there is a psychological overlay. But did she really take that into consideration?
Well, as I was going to say, the other evidence also gives us a window into what the intensity of her pain was. And when you look at the treatment records and you look at what she told her doctors about her response to treatment, it's very compelling evidence. We have many, many indications in the record from Dr. Smucker. In 1996, there are many indications that she obtained a good deal of improvement. Her symptom relief was reported with a sacroiliac valve. She had trigger point injections and physical therapy, which helped her, and that was noted on numerous times. Excellent pain relief, Dr. Smucker said, improving nicely. We have a physical therapist who says on many occasions that her overall functioning is quite well at this point. One even says that she doesn't have any symptoms at, in her arms or neck anymore. David Moss on 188 says no longer has any type of arm symptoms or neck symptoms, and the back pain has improved. So when you look at those kinds of things, and at her hearing, remember that she said she obtained very little relief from her treatment, and yet when she's with her doctors and they're administering the treatment, and it's at the time when she's actually getting the treatment, she's telling them it helps her a lot. And that's kind of disconnect between what she's saying at the hearing and what she's telling her doctor is something that the ALJ can consider when trying to decide whether her pain complaints are credible. Likewise, we have her activities, which again, there's a disconnect between what she says at the hearing and what she says to her doctors. At the hearing, she said that she doesn't take care of her infant daughter at all. She didn't take care of her at all during the first 4 years, that her parents took care of her during the day, and that by the time she was four, she was pretty much taking care of herself. Where in her statements to her doctor, she said something quite different. She told Dr. Smucker that she did a good share of the work in the home and that she was running the household and caring for her little girl. That really indicates she's the primary caregiver. That was at 354 in the transcript. Dr. Aronson, too, she said he was told by Ms. Bailey that she stayed at home and she took care of her 14-month-old daughter. Dr. Niemeyer, very significantly, didn't give any sedative pain medications to the claimant because she asked not to have them because she wanted to remain alert because she takes care of her daughter during the day. Very significant evidence that she's actually doing more than she's claiming at the hearing.
That's the Lee Sigler, though, she doesn't ever come out and say that her opinion isn't credible. She just makes some comments about, well, maybe she's more sympathetic than something else. It's a little hard to know exactly what she is saying.
She's giving more weight to the earlier opinion. She references it rather. Oh, my time is up. I'll finish this thought. She does reference that she's looking at the remainder of the evidence from the doctor and that the limitation against lying down and sitting for 15 minutes appears to be based on what the claimant told her.
Thank you, Ms. Siegel.
Thank you. And we ask that the court affirm the commissioner's decision.
Mr. Schultz. Michelle, it's a lot about this credibility situation with respect to child care. Isn't there a tension between what your client said to her physicians and what she said in the, at the hearing?
No, I don't believe that there is, because the ability to do some housework and take, wash some dishes and help her child and make her some a meal, cook dinner, isn't inconsistent with the inability to sit or stand for more than 15 or 20 minutes, nor is it inconsistent with the need to be able to lie down from time to time. And for 30 to 60 minutes at a time, there's nothing that says that the child couldn't watch television for a while. Ms. Bailey never said that her parents were the sole caretakers for her child. That's a mischaracterization by the administrative law judge. She only said that her parents helped. She didn't ask Dr. Niemeyer not to prescribe sedative medication. That was Dr. Niemeyer told her that he didn't want to prescribe it for her because he knew that she had a small child at home. And Dr. Niemeyer was an orthopedic physician, not a general practitioner. In addition, the fact that the ALJ credited Ms. Bailey's claims of pain as to her inability to sit or stand for long periods of time. What she never then says is how come that same pain couldn't require Ms. Bailey to have to lie down occasionally, as Dr. Lee Sigler noted. There's no comment about that at all. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Schultz. Indeed, our thanks to both counsel for their fine briefs and presentations before us today. The case is taken under advisement.